Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free. You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're sharing our favorite songs that pose questions. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we have new albums by Kendrick Lamar and Florence and the Machine to review.
What is a miniskirt? A man and his feelings were bitter nerve. What is a woman that really hurt? A demon, you're better off killing her. What is a relative? Make a repetitive narrative on how you did it first. That is a predator in reverse. All of your presidents, he with thirst. What is a neighborhood reputable? That is a snitch on a pedestal. What is a house with a better view? A family broken in variables. What is a rapper with jewelry? A way that I show my maturity. What if I call on security? That mean I'm calling on God for purity. I wanna get me a therapist. I can debate all my theories and sharing it well. Consolidate all my comparisons. Humble enough because time was...
That is a little bit of United in Grief, the opening track on the highly anticipated new album by Kendrick Lamar. His first, Greg, in 5 years. Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. Kendrick Lamar, what a story and what an artist. Raised in Compton, California, started out with mixtapes like so many rappers do, got signed to the big leagues, and began to make a hell of a splash. Good Kid, Mad City, 2012, To Pimp a Butterfly, and Damn, 2015 and 2017, got every accolade imaginable, from Grammys to the Pulitzer Prize for Kendrick. Yeah. And then he went silent for 5 years, as I said. People have been wondering, what is Kendrick doing? What will he return with? I'll tell you, he returned with a sprawling 70-minute double album cut into two distinctive parts, a journey from beginning to end with some of his regular producers and many other guest stars and guest producers, and it's a cast of seemingly 100. Let us play a track from Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, and then we'll come back with our opinions. There is a lot to talk about with this record. This is a song called Mirror. We bumped in with United in Grief, which opens this sprawling collection of music. Mirror concludes it. Kendrick Lamar on Sound Opinions.
Cause all of it's toxic. Girl, I'm not relevant to giving no profit. Personal gain of my pain is nonsense. Darling, my demons is off the leash for a mosh pit. Baby, I just had a baby, you know she need me. Working on myself and counseling is not easy. Don't you point a finger, just to point a finger. Cause critical thinking is a deal breaker. Faith in one man is a ship sinking. Do yourself a favor and get a mirror that mirror grievance. They pointed at me so the reflection can mirror freedom. She told me that she need me the most, I didn't believe her. She even called me names on a post. The world can see it. Jokes and gaslighting. Mad at me because she didn't get my vote. She said,
that's a track called Mirror from the new Kendrick Lamar record, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, a dense record. If this were a vinyl record or a CD collection, it would be two discs. two albums.
Yeah, most albums might be a meaty short story. This is a novel on the level of like War and Peace.
Yeah, this is like a purge, you know. Can you tell that this guy's been to therapy?
He tells us about 100 times.
He tells right up front that he has been, and he's in a process of self-examination, big time on this record, to the point of where you're wondering, is Kendrick a nice guy or not, you know? There's a lot of questions that are here. And I'm not saying this in a mean-spirited way at all. It's fascinating in a lot of ways. But when I think about this young guy, what he did early on in his career, Section 80, Good Kid, Mad City,
yeah,
talking about, you know, growing up in one of the toughest areas in the entire world for a young black man, To Pimp a Butterfly, looking outward and the social outreach, extending what he saw in the ghetto to the world around him.
Okay, can I interject? When you want to understand Black Lives Matter in the wake of George Floyd and so many others,
right,
you need to listen to Pimp a Butterfly.
Right, absolutely. What we have here, though, is a man going interior again. And I think much like Dylan sort of casting off that yoke of spokesman for a generation, Kendrick doesn't want any of that.
Oh, he
said, don't call me a savior.
Yep.
Don't call me this. Don't call me that. It's fascinating in the way he's deconstructing himself and basically saying, look, I'm as screwed up as anybody else. And he's showing us exactly how. I mean, when you talk about some of these tracks here, it's deeply disturbing. The cameos by Kodak Black, who's not exactly the most enlightened artist on the planet, his support of R. Kelly, a man, you know, we are in intimate terms with from the standpoint of, you know, the wrongs he committed, the attack on cancel culture, the use of gay slurs in a track about a relative's struggle with gender identity.
Monty is a man now. I watch a man, this girl, hold their hands down, tipping the avenues under streetlights made his, thinking I want me a backpack. When I get big, they hug on the corner like California came cold, hand all up a skirt, cars whistling down the road. See, my auntie is a man now, slight bravado, scratching the lights.
I mean, these are the kind of things you leave yourself questioning. What's going on here? And I think Kendrick is doing this intentionally. He's neither a superhero or a supervillain, he's telling us. He's this guy who's deeply flawed and dealing with it on a record. Meanwhile, there's the musical aspect of this, which I think got cast to the side.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't even think about the music here. There's a lot of tracks here where the beats are so subtle or non-existent, you're wondering, you know, what kind of music is this? Is he trying to invent a new genre here? It's like he's completely taking an off-ramp off the hip-hop world and sort of on an island by himself, which is, I think, exactly his intention with this record. But if you're a big Kendrick Lamar fan, as many of us are, as, you know, we are on this show, this is a huge disappointment to me. This record was a major letdown. I was so looking forward to this record. And on a musical level, it's a huge letdown. On a personal level, it's fascinating. But, man, do I really want to know that much about this minutia of Kendrick's life? I don't think so.
Well, you know, I disagree with you about the music. I think a lot of it is a polyglot collection of every sound he's fascinated in, from the jazzy to the psychedelic funk or psychedelic soul, to straight street-driven rap, to, you know, Quiet Storm. There are moments of Quiet Storm. I have not been as upset reviewing an album by an artist I respect and have loved. I can't remember when, Greg. This was a real wrestle for me because the central theme, and you didn't mention it, is the generational black trauma passed down, you know, the abusive dad or the sexual abuse in youth passed to the next generation, which Kendrick at one point takes back to slavery.
Conversation not being addressed in black families, the devastation haunting generations and humanity. They raped our mothers, then they raped our sisters, then they made us watch, then made us rape each other. Psychotic torture between our lives, we ain't recovered, still living as victims in the public eyes who pledge allegiance. Every other brother has been compromised.
I understand generational trauma. I've had to write about it for 25 years, writing about R. Kelly. To hear him, you know, saying of R. Kelly, I think about Robert Kelly, if he weren't molested, I wonder if life will fail him. Yes, the molested in youth often struggle severely to recover. That trauma lingers. And some, according to all of the experts I have talked to, a small amount become abusers. Mm-hmm. And some actually fight to protect the abused. White B-word tossed around again and again and again in Worldwide Steppers. The B-word throughout this record is as offensive to me as the N-word, and rightfully so to mm-hmm. many people. You know, you cannot use the words of the oppressor, or worse, even if you are playing a character, without going deeper than he does. You said that the examination in of aunties, of his two relatives who mm-hmm. were trans, is superficial. Many people have pointed that out. I have not heard a more thoroughly disturbing explosion of domestic violence since Eminem and his many songs about Kim, his ex-wife. We cry together. He is going back and forth in a violent mm-hmm. Argument with the actress Taylor Page, using the B word, getting abusive. You talking about R. Kelly being an abuser, he says to his mm-hmm. partner, will you still listen to his music?
You the reason R. Kelly can't recognize that he's abusive.
Hey, shut the fuck up. We all know you still playing this music.
Now, that's a fascinating question. Mm. Black trauma and the art and the artist and all of these questions, even cancel culture, which he deals with as superficially as Drake or Kanye.
That's the disturbing part about
You know, but that's a disturbing listen. Yeah. He intends it to be disturbing, and he is using the word of oppressors for gay people, for women. Wait a minute. Let's talk about trauma, Kendrick. I was traumatized listening to this record. I can only imagine what victims of sexual abuse and homophobia are going to feel listening to this record.
Well, I agree with everything you said, with the exception of, I don't think the black trauma is a new theme for him. I think this goes back to his earliest stuff.
Yeah.
When he was talking about growing up in Compton, when he was talking about the world around him.
He's examined that before.
And he did it so much more richly and so much more incisively on those early records. This seems like a... like almost a temper tantrum, you know? It's kind of like, stop beating me up, leave me alone. That argument that he creates with Taylor Page, it's disturbing, but it's like, basically, look, I'm a bad guy. You don't want to follow me, you know? It's almost like, leave me alone.
Well, there's that ambiguity right on the cover. He is with his romantic partner, and they have two of their children, and he has a baby in his arms and a gun in his belt.
It's disturbing on so many levels. And, you know, I guess... we're disappointed because we're expecting a masterpiece, and this is not that.
I need my golden crown of sorrow, my bloody sword to swing, my empty halls to echo with grand self-mythology. I am no mother, I am no bride, I am king. I am no mother, I am no bride, I am king.
That is a track called King from the new Florence and the Machine record, Dance Fever. We're going to learn a new word today, Jim.
Yes.
Remember with Jack White, we learned a new word. And
what was Jack's word?
With Jack White, we learned the word eosophobia.
Oh,
right?
The fear
of the darkness. We are going to learn choreomania from this Florence Welch record. Dancing yourself to death, basically.
I took a deep dive into that word because we both love words. St. Vitus's dance, St. John's dance, the dancing plague, the Middle Ages.
That's an entire
village dances till they drop.
And the idea...
Sounds like some raves I've been to.
And, you know, she's always sort of been into this pagan hedonism thing.
Yes, yes.
And that fits in very nicely. Florence has talked about, Florence Welch, the namesake of the band, has talked about this idea of, you know, when we get out of this pandemic, finally, we're going to dance. We're going to go out. Ostensibly made a soundtrack for that. This is her fifth studio record. Huge selling artist. Headlined Glastonbury a few years ago. Now she's back with her fifth record. Here's a track from it called Free. Florence and the Machine from Dance Fever on Sound Opinions.
Puts me down, chews me up.
That is Free by Florence and the Machine, Florence Welch. Greg, I wish I liked this record. It was a tough week for me. I went back to our first review of Florence on the show, how big, how blue, how beautiful. My complaint there is one I have uttered many times. As you know, I have a physical aversion to Broadway theatricality. Mm. Makes my throat close, my eyes water, and then I drop. And Florence is obviously a talented songwriter. The problem is there could be three or four good ideas in a song, but she'll put in 10. Problem is she has an enduring love of bombast. Mm-hmm. Why hit somebody with a blast at 8 when she could do 14? You know, and it's just, she's a cheese ball, for God's sake. Go to Choreomania. As I said, I'm fascinated by this concept. I think there was much here. But the lyrics, I just kept spinning and I danced myself to death. You said rock and roll is dead, but is that just because it has not been resurrected in your image? Like, if Jesus came back, but in a beautiful dress, and all the evangelicals were like, oh, yes. Like, what are you talking about? All right.
But she's talking about how men have defined rock and roll, and she's saying, what if a woman did it?
Yes.
Basically, women are making great rock and roll. It's never been dead. She's saying it's still here, but
yeah,
women are making it
well,
now.
Well, look at the history of sound opinions.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, we agree with that, but I'm not sure this is rock and roll. This is more like Broadway schmaltz.
I disagree completely. I think you're wrong. I think there's a very rock and roll record. Have you ever seen her live?
Yeah, I've seen her live.
She's fantastic. I think she's just a great performer, and I think she's a way more interesting songwriter than you're giving her credit for.
I think she's waiting for Vegas to call.
There's a lot of personal stuff in this record, as there was in the last one, which is a big change from her.
I know. She had a baby,
away from those,
dealing with being a mom.
Those fantastical elements that were on the early record, big part of that. Yeah, I could see the criticism there, but, you know, it's Wuthering Heights' Kate Bush, right? It's that era of that kind of music. I mean, for me, I see her as like a lineage. Kate Bush, Susie and the Banshees, Susie Sue, and her are in this lineage of, you know, music as this sort of ecstatic thing. You know, her relationship with God is very, very tenuous at best.
And her relationship with romance and her relationship with motherhood, all of those parts are questioning. When she's questioning them, I think she's spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But at other times, the cheese quotient, I mean, Kate Bush was never this cheesy. And Susie Sue, it was obviously
It depends on what you're saying about cheese. I disagree with you. I think they're accessing a side of their personality and a side of their emotionality that isn't typically accessed by white male rockers. And I think it's fascinating for that purpose alone. But she's talking about big subjects here. You know, King, she's talking about making a choice between career and motherhood. Her resistance to society, assigning specific roles to women, you know, in Dream Girl Evil. I think that's a great song. Angel, Devil, Temptress, you have to be one of these things. Her struggle with alcohol addiction, which was a topic on the last record, comes back in a couple of songs. And her relationship with God, Girls Against God. How can you not love that song? I mean, it's questioning in all the right ways, you know?
If the inspiration behind this record, she said this record was heavily inspired by Iggy Pop. If he recorded it, or Courtney Love, okay?
The sound of music from 2006 and feel kind of sick. Oh God, you're gonna get it. You'll be sorry that you missed
it. I hate to rain on your parade. I just can't get down with this with Florence, man.
The dance stuff raises the roof, and the introspective stuff is as good as she's ever done. I love this record.
Well, that's what we thought of the new albums by Kendrick Lamar. We forgot to mention, Kendrick, for that argument song we both found so disturbing, takes the main hook from Florence and the Machine.
Right.
That's what we thought of Kendrick Lamar and Florence and the Machine. Now we want to know your opinions. Leave your review in a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Coming up, we're going to share our favorite songs that pose questions. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Remember being in the...
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. I'm excited to do another of our list shows. It's producer Alex's favorite kind of show that we do. And they're always a fun way to dig through our music collections and recontextualize songs you may never have heard played on the show and tell you some stories often as well. This time, the theme is questions.
Well, aren't we all questioning our existence at some point, you know? And it's great when pop music does it, right?
Yes, it's been, well, it's been that kind of period for 2 years.
Precisely. 1960, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, the Shirelles. I can't believe how powerful that song still is. I mean, you know, a lot of pop music from that era comes and goes. It was, oh yeah, that was good for back then.
Yeah.
This song still resonates, I think, with any young person who's
timeless.
Ever had a relationship, right? And for good reason. I mean, it was written by two pros. Jerry Goffin and Carole King wrote this song. But the performance by Shirley Owens, of the lead singer, the lead voice of the Shirelles, then only 19 years old.
Man.
So in many ways, she was living this life. She understood this question intimately. It is an existential question. You know, you're in a relationship. Are we in it for this moment that you want so badly?
Yeah.
Or are you going to still love me tomorrow? Are you still going to be here
and
for me?
And when you're 19, you have no idea.
And, you know, subtext to this. You know, if I get pregnant, if I have this,
right.
If I need to have this baby, are you going to be there for me? All these kind of these questions are all folded into this song, and it's one reason why it got banned on some stations. You know, they just thought it was too sexual, quote unquote. So, big question and an amazing song. It was, by the way, this was the first number one song by an all-black female group in pop music history, the Shirelles, with "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow." On Sound Opinions. That is the great Shirelles, "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow." Sometimes people take the still out, the technically not in the song title, "Will You Love Me Tomorrow," from 1960.
The still is in parens.
Correct.
I love that. It's interesting, Greg, that we both went to this era for our first picks, and we both chose a song written or co-written by Jerry Goffin, who put the bomb in the bomb, bomb, bomb. Barry Mann, who was a great songwriter as well, wrote this with Jerry Goffin, 1961. After writing this hit with Jerry Goffin, Barry Mann goes on to fall in love with and have a great partnership with his songwriting wife, Cynthia Weil. We had them both on the show back in episode 291.
All right.
But Goffin and Mann, you know, were both huge doo-wop fans, and they were essentially writing a novelty song. They knew it was that would pose this question, who put the bomb, because there were so many of these doo-wop hits, right? Blue Moon, bomb, 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 and Dipty, dip, 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 right? And the Edsels, Ramalama, Ding Dong, and the Diamonds, the Boogity Shootity, right? You know, the nonsense, right? Because let's face it, Little Richard taught us, sometimes words don't have to be verbal to say depths of knowledge, of question, of expressing lust, right? Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank the guy who wrote the song that made my baby fall in love with me. Barry, recording this himself, scoring a hit, starts out, right? So all this doo-wop that brought us together, that we made out to, right, that made us fall in love. Who wrote that song? I owe him a thanks, right? Who was it who put the bop in the bop, shoo bop, shoo bop, and the dip, and the dip, the dip, the dip? I mean, it's just timeless. It's funny. It's wonderful. And, you know, it inspired the first great fanzine in rock writing history. Do you know?
Crawdaddy.
No. Greg Shaw's Bomp Magazine.
Bomp, okay.
Bomp Magazine, Greg Shaw, the publisher of the initial Psychotic Reactions and Carburetor Dung piece by Lester Bangs, all 40,000 words of it. So here's Barry Mann on Sound Opinion.
Oh, who put the bomb in the bomb, 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 bomb? Who put the rhyme in the ram-a-lama ding dong? Who put the bop in the bop shabop shabop? Who put the dip in the dip 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 dip? Who was that man? I'd like to shake his hand. He made my baby fall in love with me. Each time that we're alone, boogity 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 shoot, sets my baby's heart on a glow.
Greg, who did put the bomb? Have you ever figured it out? I'd say it was Little Richard.
Talk about an existential question.
A timeless. Man, and nobody's just ever gotten to the bottom of it.
We can't figure it out to this day.
Like the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot.
Yeah. I got another question for you, Jim. Are friends electric?
I was so mad. You got your list together in no time, and I saw that on your list because I was going to go to Gary Numan.
Yeah, Tube Way Army, a.k.a. Gary Numan. Tube Way Army was his band. The joke about this song, well, not a joke, but sort of like the funny line about this song is that, you know, Gary Numan went into the studio to make a punk rock record with his band Tube Way Army, and there was a Mini Moog sitting there. He met a Mini Moog synthesizer and put it together with the rock rhythm section and the Mini Moog as being basically the lead instrument on the song alongside his voice, created the beginnings of electro rock in the late 70s, early 80s. Two Way Army is the name of the group. The song is, Newman was a huge fan of dystopian science fiction. Yep. Philip K. Dick, J.G. Ballard, and there was a short story that he read that really resonated with him. What is English life? What is life going to be like in London 30 years from now? Now, remember, this is 1979.
Yeah.
So he's basically saying something that would have happened maybe 10 years ago in our time frame. And the short story was positing the idea that eventually all services would be rendered by these robots. They would come to your door and deliver whatever it is you had ordered that day.
Yeah.
This particular day, somebody orders a sex worker who the neighbors are wondering, is that a robot? What is that? Who is that at the door? That's the question. Are friends electric? Who is your friend visiting you?
Yeah.
Is that a robot or a human being? And so the neighbors are gossiping about it. And this little vignette about a futuristic society with a little twist, thanks to Gary Newman's rendering of it. This is Two Way Army with Our Friends Electric on Sound Opinions. Ah, yes, the dawning of a great era for post-punk music, electro-rock music, whatever you want to call
it. And I just love sci-fi that poses a question. Do androids dream of electric sheep?
Exactly. Our friends Electric, Tube Way Army. What do you got next, Jim?
Greg, I'm going next to a rather silly song. Baha Men's huge hit, Who Let the Dogs Out? Now, this song is often sung by me or my beloved wife in the De Regattas household. Just down the block, a couple of doors away, there's a pet rescue place, right, that houses pets, brings them back to life, and then gives them... Alex, our beloved producer, does this sort of work, not at that place, on her, out of the goodness of her heart. And I applaud it. It's wonderful. But they walk the dogs like six or eight at a time past the house. Thankfully, it hasn't happened when we're taping, right? It usually happens early in the morning and then in the evening at sunset. And, six or eight dogs make a heck of a racket, especially when I'm cooking steak out on the patio. And then Carmel sings Who Let the Dogs Out, or I sing Who Let the Dogs Out. I wound up doing one of those deep dives, again, spending half an hour reading up on Baha Men. It was written, by a songwriter, heard by this producer, Jonathan King, this English novelty song producer from the 60s, who also produced the first Genesis record. He's one of those Zelig-like characters. And he had a minor hit with it, but this junk Anew band. Junk Anew was the genre in the Bahamas. Their manager said, you guys really ought to cover this. Mm. And they said, oh, yeah, this is a hit. And sure enough, it becomes a top five hit, both in the UK and the US. The original writer of the song and the Baha Men both intended it as the response to the angry woman who is on the street subject to catcalls. Mm-hmm. Men are walking by, and they think they have the right to comment on a woman's looks.
Right.
And the woman is saying, who let the dogs out? Mm-hmm. It's not actually canines here. Mm-hmm. It was written as a feminist response. It was covered by the Baha Men as a feminist response. It was the only hit they ever had, by the way. It was the only song anybody
yes,
knows.
Yes, you can understand why, too.
I love this song, though. You gotta. Who Let the Dogs Out by Baha Men.
Who let the dogs out?
Was nice, the party was pumping.
Hey, yeah. E-I-O.
And everybody having a ball.
E-I-O.
Until the fellas start the name calling.
E-I-O.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor white shout out.
Who let the dog
oh out? Man. What a story. How the heck did Jonathan King come to be associated with Who Let the Dogs Out?
I want equal time for cats. Come on, man.
Well, I'm allergic to cats like I am to Florence and the Machine. What do you got next?
What I have next is a question song from the Pixies. This is one of my absolute favorite songs by the Pixies. It's from their 1988 Surfer Rosa record. What I love, the anecdote about this song, Where Is My Mind? It is the song that the scientists used when they rebooted the Mars rover. You know, they had to reboot the machine on Mars, and they reawakened it by playing this song. You know, mm-hmm. when it was reawakened, this song was the one. Where's my mind?
Yeah.
You know, I talked to Black Francis about Black Francis. I love the idea of him going scuba diving. That's what he says. I went scuba diving, and then there was this little fish chasing me around, and I go, what's going on? You know,
yeah.
It was like, I couldn't, that was the inspiration for the song. And there's actually a couple of lines in the song referencing this little incident that happened in his life. To me, it's a song about disorientation. It's kind of my feel. It's kind of like what I felt after listening to the Kendrick record. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like, what just happened?
Did I hear that?
Yeah. Why is this happening? And I think about it. This is something I ask myself 10 times a day when I'm watching the news. Right. There's a haunting beauty in this song, though, and I've told this story before, but I come back to it because Kim Deal's backing vocal makes the song.
Mm.
Those haunting vocals when they were performing it. At Coachella, when they did their little reunion gig, one of their first reunion gigs, almost 20 years ago now, what a moment that was! You know, the setting was so beautiful, and that voice just ringing off the mountains there. So, Where Is My Mind from the Pixies? A great question song from 1988. I'm sorry. That is Where Is My Mind from the Pixies. Jim, you've got another one for us.
I do, Greg. I'm going to play a couple of great question songs that come from the last halfway good album by great bands. I don't know. It seems like bands reach a certain point, they're running out of inspiration, so they start asking questions rather than telling us something. You know, The Clash, as far as I'm concerned, pretty much ended with combat rock when Mick Jones walked away after that album. 1981, and there's some Rock the Casbah, really? Come on. All right, but Should I Stay or Should I Go? Is just one of those stone-cold, classic, timeless rock songs. It could have been done by Bo Diddley. It could have been done by The Clash. It is posing this question. Now, people have pondered forever what is exactly the question, because Mick Jones was in an apparently back-and-forth difficult relationship with, of all people, Ellen Foley,
mm-hmm, yeah,
who sang on Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell, right? And he's, you know, is it about the relationship ending? Is it about him soon to leave the Clash? Or is it, you know, he has said, hey, we were just trying to write a good rockin' song, our attempt at a classic. That's what he says. And, you know, you listen to it, you listen to the drums, you listen to the propulsive nature. And Chuck Berry is the obvious, Chuck Berry or Bo Diddley. I mean, mm-hmm, that's what it sounds like to me. Where the Spanish lyrics come in, you know, apparently, you know, Joe Strummer had to put his mark. It was a Jones song. It was, mm-hmm, a great Jones song. I'm going to put myself in here. So he and Joe Ely do the Spanish part, but neither of them spoke Spanish. So they found the tape operator's mother, who was Ecuadorian. So it's Ecuadorian Spanish. I do love whenever Joe Strummer is sang in Spanish, because you know he doesn't know what he's saying. But man, this is a great song. Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble.
I don't know, Greg. Should he stay? Should he go?
It's one of those questions that has no answer, right?
Yeah. That's the best kind of question song. Let us now turn to our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. We love on these list shows to hear what our staff loves in music as well. Sol, what are you going to lay on us?
So I'm going to play Who's Gonna Save You Now by Rina Sawayama. It's off her 2020 release called Sawayama.
A new question,
mm-hmm,
song. Newish,
yeah. It's a song about cutting ties with someone who you sacrificed a lot for, and it came out in April of 2020, so everything was on lockdown, and this sort of brought back that live element in music, because it is a studio recording, but it is made to sound like it's performed live.
Hmm.
There's live chants in the beginning, there's echoes. And it just hit differently at the time where there was no live music in sight for a bit.
Let's hear it.
Pain ain't gonna put it away. That's why you stay deep in the prayers. For so long I waited on you. When with the light till it was true. So you burned the bridges.
That is Rina Sawayama. Who's Gonna Save You Now? Sol Delgadillo's pick for a great question song. It was very good. Coming up, we're going to share some more question songs, and that's in a minute on Sound Opinion.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm /charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. We're sharing our favorite songs with questions for titles. Next up, producer Alex Claiborne has a pick for us. Alex, what are you going to lay on us?
So I know Soul brought in a more contemporary song. I'm going to go back to 1989 with a song by Dolly Parton. It's called "Why'd You Come In Here Looking Like That?" And it's and it's off of her album White Limousine. And it's actually not a song that she wrote. We know that Dolly is an extremely prolific songwriter. But this was written by Bob Carlyle and Randy Thomas, who were country and also like contemporary Christian singers and songwriters. What I like about this song, though, is that Dolly is reversing kind of the kinds of songs that men sing about women. She's sort of reversing that to be singing about a man and kind of, I wouldn't say objectifying, but definitely speaking about him as many men speak about women in music. And, you know, she says, "Why'd you come in here looking like that in your high-heeled boots and your painted-on jeans, all decked out like a cowgirl's dream?" So it's like very much, yeah, like you can tell the original lyrics were probably reversed, like singing about. And so this song is great. Sonically, it's so warm and sweet, just like a lot of Dolly vocals, and we have Bella Fleck on banjo, and it's just very sonically soothing, and it's like a boost of serotonin when you're feeling kind of low. This is "Why'd You Come In Here Looking Like That" by Dolly Parton on Sound Opinions. But I remember when he was mine. Why'd you come in here looking like that in your high heel boots and your painted old jeans, all decked out like a cowgirl's dream, waltzing right in?
Can't get enough Dolly Parton.
Yeah, we always need some Dolly Parton serotonin, as Alex Claiborne described it.
That you hear how excited Alex was, right? Imagine what she'd be like if we actually land Dolly Parton someday.
"Why'd You Come In Here Looking Like That" from Dolly Parton. Thank you, Alex. Andrew Gill, we're going down the production line here. You've got a pick for us too, Andrew.
Yes, how's it going, guys? My pick is the 1971 hit from the Shy Lights, "Have You Seen Her?"
Love it.
And
love it.
Yeah, I came across this song recently because I was reading an obituary in the Sun Times for a woman named Helen Wooten, who worked in the music industry and worked with the Shy Lights. This was her favorite song. And she was a manager, a promoter. She ran clubs. She was close personal friends with the Shy Lights.
Well, spanning decades in Chicago.
Yes, yeah. And she died May 5th at the age of 72. But this song was in that article, and then I was looking for a song that asked a question, and this one came to my mind. But you know where I first heard this song? MC Hammer, "Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him."
He sampled it, yeah.
He did a straight-up cover of this song. So that was my somewhat less timeless first
introduction.
Exposure, but it's a great song, you know. Today, who can deny it?
I ride. Oh, I see her face everywhere I go, on the street and even at the picture show. Have you seen her? Tell me, have you seen her? Oh, I hear her voice as the cold winds blow, in the sweet music on my radio. Tell me, have you seen her?
The Shy Lights, Have You Seen Her? Great pick from Andrew Gill. Mr. Cott, you're up next.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of, you mentioned MC Hammer. I'm sure I interviewed him once. He was an entertaining interview.
He was a pleasant fellow at the height of his fame.
Yeah,
I talked to him too.
But you know, he told me he grew up in a household where, you know, his mom would be listening to black radio stations, and I'm sure he heard this song like a million times because it was such a huge hit in the early 70s. You couldn't escape it. So no doubt he would sample it at some point. Speaking of sampling, A Tribe Called Quest, Can I Kick It? There's a question,
yeah.
Right? From their debut album in 1990. Some amazing samples. Obviously, most listeners of Sound Opinions will know that it samples Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side.
Yep.
We use it as intro music occasionally for some of our episodes. That bass line by Herbie Flowers, right?
Mm.
He was one of the great bass players and British session musician brought in by David Bowie, who produced that record. But also Dr. Lonnie Smith with a sample from Spinning Wheel. He did a cover of that Blood, Sweat, and Tears song. And then Sunshower by Dr. Buzzard's original Savannah Band. great, great jazzy samples that underpin this song. And then there's Q-Tip on top. Can I Kick It? Yes, you can.
It kicks back. I love that.
Call and response. The basis of African music, black music, going back to Africa centuries ago. A fulcrum of gospel music, certainly, call and response. And then hip-hop after that. So, you know, Q-Tip and Tribe tapping in to this wellspring of the music they grew up with and their ancestors grew up with and their ancestors made and formed on top of the jazz sample. It was a really fresh sound for hip-hop at that time, at that crucial time, and a song that continues to this day. Yes, Can I Kick It? Yes, you can. A Tribe Called Quest on Sound Opinions.
Can I kick it? Can I kick it? Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Well, I'm gone.
Oh, yeah.
Can I kick it to all the people who can quest like a tribe does? Before this, did you really know what live was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cuz getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug.
I think you can kick it, Mr. Cott. That was a passionate intro to a great song. I've got a hip-hop pick next, and I'm going really deep.
Yeah.
You know, Tupac Shakur, obviously a stellar, giant talent, not for the most part served well by the many, many, many posthumous releases. All right. If Tupac ever, left a voice message, that's been turned into an album, okay? This is an exception. Not all of the album, but The Rose That Grew From Concrete took some of his poetry and writings, and other artists turned them into songs. And we have Mos Def, the great rapper who was initially part of Black Star and then a prolific solo career. Great rapper taking on a poem that Tupac had written about the Black Panther movement, which, yes, there was some violence associated. Some of it was foist upon them by the feds. There were the soup kitchens. There were the health clinics. There were the daycare centers. You know, I mean, a force in the black community in Chicago, on the West Coast. You know, Mos Def was moved by the words that Tupac had written and created this track, Can You See Pride in the Panther? And again, the call and response, like you were talking about, who am I? A panther. What I got? I got soul. I just love this track. You know, if there's another great posthumous Tupac song, I can't think of it, but this one's a gem.
I said the P is for power, the A for action, the N T because now is the time to get it done. See, the H is for heart and the E for effect. The R hold it down at the end for respect. Who am I, a panther? Who am I, a panther? What I got, I got soul. What I got love. What I got pride. What I wanna be free. Raise your hands in the air if you feel like me. Who am I, a panther?
Panther.
Who am I, a panther?
Panther.
What I got soul. What I got love. What I got pride. What I wanna be free. Raise your hands in the air if you feel like me.
Can you see pride in the panther? Mos Def collaborating with the late Tupac. You ever heard that one?
Yeah, I have. I mean, you're right. There isn't a whole lot of great posthumous Tupac out there, but this is one of them for sure. Speaking of posthumous, I'm not sure that Pulp is still a going entity. I think they might be. Jarvis Cocker has been releasing solo records.
He's been doing all the soundtrack stuff for Wes Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. He's a busy man. He's a great songwriter. You know, at the core of that whole Britpop movement in the 90s, you know, alongside Oasis and Blur, they put out a string of really fine singles and albums during that era. Among the first breakthrough hits for Pulp was Do You Remember the First Time in 1994. Yeah, yeah. And you think on the face of it, it's kind of an obvious song. Like, of course, you know, we know what we're talking about this. You know, is that a Foreigner song or something, you know?
Yeah.
Feels like the first time,
Poison.
Right? You know, exactly. But no, it's, as usual, Jarvis Cocker, I think, you know, triple layered meaning here with the song. Obviously, a song about losing your virginity. He's talked about it. He said, yeah, this is a song about losing my virginity, a universal subject. But it's also a song about nostalgia and how it can become an albatross. You know, in this song, the girl has moved on, but he hasn't. You know, so you sort of get tied into this moment that you had, and you wish it could happen again, and that's not going to happen. He's not seeing the world realistically.
Can't go home again.
And finally, I think this is the cherry on top. A song that kicked off Pulp's reunion show, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of guys, come on. We all know what this is.
Right,
this is
right,
an
right,
exercise
right,
in nostalgia. We're going to make a lot of money.
Make some money.
And it's a commentary on that. So Jarvis Cocker getting it right three times with Do You Remember the First Time on Sound Opinions.
Do you remember the first time?
That is Pulp with Do You Remember the First Time?
As I said about the Clash and Combat Rock, I have the opinion that REM's Monster is their last somewhat salvageable album. You know, there were problems on that record. You know they're losing the plot. And afterwards, it just wasn't REM, at least to me, anymore. Coming especially on the heels of Out of Time and Automatic for the People, two masterpieces, this is the album where they decided to rock, do monstrous rock again, right? And the song What's the Frequency, Kenneth, is indeed a rocking song. You know, it was based on this obscure, God, we have to go back to the early 90s. You know, Dan Rather, who was then the nightly news anchor, said that he'd been assaulted by a couple of guys on the street in New York City who kept asking him, Kenneth, what is the frequency? Mm-hmm. Kenneth, what is it? You know, that's like, I think Dan was kind of losing it, just like REM was starting to lose it. And then in Michael Stipe's view as the always elliptical songwriter, he was looking at this new sound coming up. All right, why did REM turn up the amps again? There was this thing called grunge happening, right? Mm-hmm. Nirvana had happened. You know, Stipe became very close with Kurt Cobain. He's asking a generational question, how the older generation often loses touch with, you know, kids today, in quotes, and REM's starting to get there. And he's wondering, what's the frequency, Kenneth? Have I still got anything to say? And do I mean anything anymore? It's a really good song from an otherwise mixed album, and then REM lost the plot.
What's the frequency, Kenneth? This y'all been so drained.
What's the frequency, Kenneth? I'll tell you the frequency, Greg. It's all the fine public radio stations that air Sound Opinions. That's the frequency. That wraps up our picks, and now we want to hear from you. If you've got a favorite questioning song, leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. I have a question for you, Greg. What is on the show next week?
Jim, the answer to that question is Amy Mann. She's going to talk about five albums that made her. Hugely influential records in her career and life.
I don't-
Don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed for an interview Jim did with artist Steve Keen about his work with bands like Apples in Stereo and Pavement.
Yep, we're going to talk visual art on the airwaves. For more sound opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor at soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultant is Katie Collins.